This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I'm here today with Paige Schilling, one of our senior intel analysts. Paige, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Today, we're going to give you a little bit of background on a recent arrest that took place on June 1st involving two members of Hezbollah's Islamic Jihad Organization, or IJO, Samir Al-Debek and Ali Qurani, who were arrested in the U.S. for conspiring to provide material support to the group, among an array of other charges. So, Paige, first, can you tell us a little bit about IJO, what their role is in Hezbollah, and et cetera?
So I like to think of IJO as Hezbollah's spy component. It's an elite branch. Specific members are chosen because they have something to offer the group, right? So in terms of Ali Qurani and Samir Al-Debek, both of them had affiliations to the United States. So they either held a U.S. passport or had the ability to obtain one. They were also educated, so this was attractive to the group. So not any normal run-of-the-mill Hezbollah member will become an IJO member. IJO in general is tasked with gathering intelligence, counterintelligence, and planning terror attacks and plots worldwide. They've been implicated well beyond their base in Lebanon, in Europe, Africa, South America, Asia, for plotting attacks. Specifically in Burgas, Bulgaria in 2012, there was an Israeli tour bus that was targeted by a suicide bomber, an IJO operative, where six people were killed. Additionally, beyond planning these attacks, they've been implicated in stockpiling. So in 2015, a Hezbollah operative was found in Cyprus to have over 8 tons of ammonium nitrate. So that's really not a small amount of this chemical. In 2012, another member alerted law enforcement to a building in Thailand that held nearly 10,000 pounds of fertilizer and 10 gallons of ammonium nitrate. So as you can see, Thailand, Cyprus, Burgas, Bulgaria, well outside of Lebanon. And also, when you think of the IJO, it's a series of handlers and operatives. Very much when you watch a spy movie and a handler calls and tasks an operative to go out and collect certain information or to, you know, gather certain materials for the group, that is very much how the IJO operates.
So you mentioned that the IJO is a really elite unit of Hezbollah. So did Al-Debek or Qurani receive any specialized training from the group?
Absolutely. So both suspects had a lot of training in different weaponry and military tactics. According to the federal complaint, they had both been instructed on the use of rocket-propelled grenade launchers and machine guns and AK-47s, and each had spent time in Lebanon at training camps for different periods and in different years. Beyond basic military training and the use of weaponry, they were also taught how to conduct interrogations, how to resist interrogations themselves. So a lot of tradecraft and what we see in IJO is helping them exceed as operatives outside of Lebanon. Particularly, Al-Debek was described as having a high degree of technical sophistication in bomb making. Following his arrest, he told authorities how he made explosives, he made landmines, how he could identify different chemicals that would be used in explosives, how he could purchase some of these chemicals at different hardware stores, and also highlighted Hezbollah's preferred method of remote detonation. So these were highly trained operatives that were living in the United States that had been specially trained by Hezbollah.
So give us a little more detail about these cases in terms of like what these individuals were doing here in the United States then.
So most importantly, in terms of law enforcement, an investigation of Hezbollah here in the United States, is that these operatives were conducting surveillance on U.S. targets, either domestically or on our interests internationally. Specifically, Qurani, he lived in New York City. He had conducted surveillance on FBI offices, National Guard facilities, the U.S. Armory, so a number of different military and law enforcement facilities. But beyond that, he had also targeted aviation and civilians generally. He had looked at John F. Kennedy International Airport. His handler had specifically asked him to recall security procedures, take pictures, understand how the baggage system worked. He was instructed to send all that information back to Lebanon. Beyond the surveillance, he was also asked to identify potential affiliates of the Israeli Defense Force that were living in the United States for assassination attempts in the future. So Samer El-Debek, on the other hand, was focused internationally as opposed to domestically. His surveillance attempts surrounded Panama, specifically the Panama Canal, and also the U.S. and Israeli embassies in Panama. Specifically in terms of the U.S. embassy, his handler was interested in him identifying vulnerabilities, really when there was a lot of people coming in and out of the embassy, security procedures, and basically areas that they could focus on in the future. However, lucky for us, Samer El-Debek said that he didn't really have a lot of knowledge about the embassy in Panama besides the fact where it was located, and he had walked by it and around it, but wasn't really able to gather all of those specific details that the handler was interested in. But overall, Karani and Samer El-Debek and the taskings they were given by these handlers really give us insight onto what the IJO is looking to acquire information on in terms of both U.S. targets domestically and U.S. interest internationally.
So two follow-on questions to that then. How was the information gathered by these operatives? And then how did they actually send it back to Hezbollah in Lebanon?
So the IJO, as this spy organization that it is, employs a lot of different tradecraft. So they used email. They also relied on USBs and memory cards to transmit information and different files and documents back to Lebanon, and also pictures of different targets. They at some point had used pagers, very old school of them, right? They had also used coded language in their phone calls because they didn't want authorities to listen in and to be able to pick up on what they were talking about. There was claims by the operatives that they, you know, were told to call a specific phone number and give a code and somebody would transfer them to the IJO operative or handler that they were looking to contact. But additionally, IJO uses certain members to protect itself, right? So they want these operatives to go out and collect information, but at the same time, they don't want the operatives to have enough information about them to give to authorities if they're captured or interrogated. So in this case, when they were transported to different areas by their handlers, you know, they had masks put on them, they were trying to disguise their identity. So, you know, in this case, when Samer El-Debek and Karani are sitting in front of U.S. authorities, they can provide information, but they can't provide everything because they don't know everything that IJO is doing.
Interesting. So in the larger context, why are these arrests important? Is this type of activity different from what we've seen over the past few years in terms of like Hezbollah arrests?
So typically over the past few years, we've seen Hezbollah supporters and sympathizers be arrested for narcotics or money laundering or weapons acquisition on behalf of the group. So typically these people are interested in benefiting Hezbollah, but they're also interested in making money for themselves and getting a cut or a slice of the pie. These arrests were the first time in the United States that IJO operatives have been arrested domestically. And these individuals are not interested per se in the money. Like they are doing it because they ideologically believe in the group. They were both born in Lebanon and they feel some loyalty to Hezbollah itself. What's also interesting about this case is that these individuals were conducting essentially pre-operational planning in the United States. They were attempting to acquire weapons, whether that be firearms or even military technology. They were conducting surveillance and identifying vulnerabilities in our infrastructure and sending that back to Lebanon and to the IJO. And lastly, it went beyond military or law enforcement targets. So they weren't trying to just identify these individuals for future operations, but they were also looking at civilian and aviation targets. So overall, the arrests of Samer El-Debek and Karani are new in terms of what we've seen over the past few years in Hezbollah arrests.
Excellent. Well, great. Thanks, Paige, for all the summary and the update.
Thanks for having me.
So for those of you who are interested in learning more about these arrests and how they fit into the larger criminal enterprise of Hezbollah, feel free to tune into our webinar on August 24th. And to get more information on that webinar and any other products related to Hezbollah, visit us at njohsp.gov.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.